Welcome to the Pause Purpose Play podcast with me, clinical psychologist Michaela Thomas. This podcast is for you if you're an ambitious working woman wanting to create more impact in the world with less impact on yourself. This is where we let go of the pressure of perfection for more joy, compassion, and connection in your life so you can burn bright, not burn out. Welcome back to the Pause Purpose Play podcast with me, your host, Michaela Thomas, expert on all things perfectionism and compassion. And we will talk about both of those things today, but related to nutrition. I'm bringing back a fabulous guest I've interviewed before, Thalia Pellegrini, who's a registered nutritional therapist. And the reason I bring her back is because I have learned so much from talking to her as part of having her in my Burn Bright group coaching program as the resident expert on all things nutrition. And you might think nutrition just means food, but today we're going to talk about all the other things that lead into the food choices you make and how you're able to nourish yourself and be more self-compassionate through what you put on your plate and what you also give yourself the permission to include in your diet. We're not going to give you preachy stuff. There's going to be a couple of hacks of simple things you can do because we know you are busy. So let's introduce my guest. Thalia Pellegrini is a BAND registered nutritional therapist. Following a decade as a broadcast journalist for the BBC, Thalia spent 3 years studying at the renowned Institute of Optimum Nutrition in London. She qualified in 2009. Her specialist interest is women's health with a focus on perimenopause, known as the Knackered Perimenopause Solution for Time-Poor Mums, and revitalized her one-to-one plan for women wanting to address health issues ranging from PMS to perimenopause, weight loss, low energy, and fatigue. So yes, we will help you feel a bit more energized and come up with some more ideas of how you can nourish yourself through nutrition. Let's dive in.
So I'm really excited to have this session with you, where we're going to talk a bit more about the things you need to know about nutrition without overwhelming yourself, so that you can feel more energized and feel more content about the food you eat. So welcome, Thalia. Feel free to introduce yourself a bit.
My name's Thalia Pellegrini, and I'm a registered nutritional therapist, and I qualified in 2009, and I specialise in women's health.
And you work with a lot of knackered mums.
Yes,
women who are overwhelmed, juggling everything.
I'd say about 98% of my clients are knackered mums. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you and me both, basically. So I'm hoping this is going to resonate with people wanting to have some not quick fixes, not fad diets, but simple tips that we can implement even when we're quite busy. So let's start on that point and try to explain to people what is a nutritionist, first off.
So a nutritional therapist is a bit like a health detective. So if you are tired all the time, if your energy is low, if you are struggling with something specific, so that could be a chronic condition, it could be PCOS, it could be endometriosis, you might be someone who feels really undone by their PMS every month, you know, it could be that you have an autoimmunity or eczema or any of these conditions that a lot of women live with day to day, the job of a nutritional therapist is to understand the root cause of those conditions and to help support either an improvement in your symptoms or to resolve them. And we do that with a very holistic approach and a sort of a body systems approach. So if someone goes to a GP and says, I've got terrible headaches, they will rule out, I'm sure, anything serious. And they'll say, well, we'll give you some painkillers, for example, to support you feeling better. Nutritional therapists would say, why are you getting the headaches in the first place? If it's not serious, you've seen your doctor, what else could be going on for you? And that's sort of, that might be our starting point. So yeah, it's a bit of a froth, which suits me as with my history as a journalist. It's a bit of digging a lot of health history to understand what's brought you to this point in your life and in your health.
So looking for the patterns, looking for the common denominators, and not just here's a sort of one solution fix all kind of blanket.
That's a really good way of describing it. So you know, if we buy a book about nutrition or about anything, any sort of therapy, it's going to be a cookie cutter approach. It can't possibly be personalized or bespoke. And of course, the biggest change and the most powerful change is when you are working one-to-one or even in a group setting, but the attention is small and focused on your specific problem so that you can can allow transformational change to take place. So, you know, I'm a great one for buying books with solutions and then letting them gather dust because I feel better having bought them, but I don't do anything about it, about actually reading it all. So bespoke nutritional therapy is about you, your health, rather than a sort of a generalized approach.
And you're giving really good examples there of when it's helpful to see a nutritional therapist versus absorbing helpful information and learning more about nutrition on your own. And when do you think it's kind of more necessary or helpful for someone to go from this sort of absorbing information to actually then getting it bespoke? Is there a particular kind of reason you see in your clients where they feel like I can no longer just piece it together on my own and now need to have the bespoke tailored approach?
Unfortunately, I often see women hit a wall and they burn out, and that's when they come and see me. So for a lot of women, it's because they haven't paid any attention to their health for a long time, and they've pushed through or they've put up with a lot of symptoms, and then they're either really quite ill when they come to me or they're just overwhelmed and exhausted. But for other women, actually, it'll be because they really want to see change and it's not happening. They might have pursued other avenues and it's not been giving them the results they want. So their next step is maybe nutritional therapy. So it's usually one or the other.
It's interesting there's the overlap there between our work, that people tend to come when they need the intervention and not spending enough focus on the prevention.
Yeah, because I think there's so much guilt around spending time and money on yourself as a mother that often it takes a crisis almost for you to feel that you can justify both those things. But, you know, I have women in my group program that will just say, you know what, this is speaking to me in terms of this is my, I do a lot of perimenopause work. This is a huge transition in my life. And there's some, a light bulb will just switch on and they'll realize that actually it is time to think about their body and really focus on their body, because perimenopause isn't a crisis, but it is a substantial impact on a lot of women's lives. The symptoms can be really challenging. And so for them, that feels comfortable somehow. That feels like we don't have to reach crisis to deal with this. This feels okay, especially because there's so much talk about perimenopause happily at the moment.
Which is good, because then we can empower ourselves to make wise decisions about how we spend our time, money and energy, knowing that this is on the horizon.
Yeah.
We're about to step into that next chapter, and what we need to be fulfilled, to be well, to be looked after, and not just be depleted and leave it to the last dregs of the energy, and then we will do something about it. And that, I see that psychologically, and you see it nutritionally. It's obviously why we've done our collaboration, where we've been sort of experts in each other's group programs, because there is so much overlap between psychology and nutrition. So what would you say, I'm kind of thinking about the image here of someone who's quite depleted and they're thinking like, now it's time, I'm going to do something for me. What do you feel people need to hear about nutrition that might be going against some of the things they've heard, might be going against myths or bad diets or the diet culture overall? What do you think is the kind of, this the one thing you need to know about nutrition?
I think a lot of women count calories, and for them, food is calories. And so they are focused often on calories in and calories out. And what that does is to diminish the impact of nutrition on their bodies. So instead of thinking about food as a way to lose or maintain weight, we need to think about nourishment. We need to think about food as a kindness to the body. It's not just a fuel. It's not just what gets us out of the house in the morning. It is information for our cells. It is information for our hormones. It is helping to instruct the body to be vibrant. So when we think about food in those terms, we change our perception of, you know, eating half a grapefruit and nothing else all day because we're trying to lose weight, to what does my body need to feel vibrant? What does my body need? So I really encourage women to think about food as nourishment. And that can be a big change for a lot of women who have historically thought of food. They have got a really antagonistic relationship with food. It's really complicated. It's disordered in terms of yo-yo dieting or just a lot of language around food that is about guilt or shame, or that's good or naughty or cheeky. I shouldn't have that. You know, I really work on changing that narrative in your head to be much more about, what does my body need today? How can I help my body feel well? And that is a very different place to restriction and guilt. And it's not just the impact of the food you eat. It's emotionally and mentally, if you have that different approach. You will feel different. You will feel more energized just from this. It's exhausting having that narrative in your head all the time, every day. What have I eaten? What can I eat? I shouldn't have eaten that. If I don't have lunch, I can have a few glasses of wine. If I have chips with dinner, I won't let myself have breakfast tomorrow. All of those things which are really punishing emotionally and physically.
The narrative, which I sometimes refer to as the earn and burn, that calories needed to be earned. I need to go to the gym first and then I've earned a treat, or I need to burn, as in I'm now overindulged in my mind and now I need to burn it off. And that becomes a very, very toxic kind of inner dialogue about it. And relationship with food is then really unhealthy.
Yeah.
And obviously it can go as far as, you know, my side in psychology is not just disordered eating, but eating disorders. And there's obviously a bit of a range difference there, thinking about anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, or like most people falling into the eating disorders not otherwise specified, which is a bit of a crap diagnosis. But when we kind of don't necessarily meet the full criteria for an eating disorder and need that sort of input, but it's much more like, actually, I'm not sure about the relationship I have with food. I think I've learned that somewhere. And obviously growing up in the 80s and 90s, we witnessed women in the media, like Victoria Beckham, being put on the scales and in a TV chat show to ask if she's lost the weight after she had a baby. People discussing Britney Spears' breasts. All of these things that we've seen, we've grown up with a narrative that we need to be thin and slim, right? What do you see when you work as a nutritionist as the most powerful impact when people let go of that and see food as nourishment? What happens to the way that they relate to their body?
It's really wonderful to see. I have a client I've been working with for about 6 to 8 months, and she came to me very much in the place of counting calories. Everyone in her office does the same. They would have weekly weigh-ins. It's just an office that she works in education. And we talked a lot about this. And then she just reached the point where she was sick and tired of counting her calories and counting her macros. And she stopped, and she made the decision, I don't want to do it anymore. And it was like a weight had been lifted. You could see she breathed better. And now she will say to me, I had some chocolate today and I didn't feel guilty about it, and it felt joyful. And nothing has changed about her weight. She hasn't gained loads of weight. She hasn't lost loads of weight. Nothing has changed except her approach to food. And so it's liberated her.
And I think of it
like a shackles.
Yeah, and that's a really heavy weight in itself. That burden of that constant inner shaming and criticism.
Decades of it, yeah.
That weighs more than the pounds you have on the scales.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the pressure of society weighs more than the pounds you have on the scales. Of the kind of just knowing that with compassion, that no wonder that I have this sort of urge to count calories, or no wonder I have this urge to restrict, because society tells me I needed to be smaller. So just stepping out of that is not an easy thing to do. So no wonder that I can fall back into that.
Yeah.
So in your experience, what are the kind of first steps people can take then to try to change their relationship with food to more of a nourishing way of looking at nutrition? What are sort of one or two simple things people can implement as a first stepping stone?
As a first stepping stone, I would pay attention to your body. I would pay attention to how you feel. Start to observe how you feel when you've had a healthy breakfast, a nourishing breakfast, how you feel after you've eaten a packet of biscuits without thinking, not because the biscuits were bad, but because you've eaten them, not because you were hungry, but because you were sad or angry or stressed. So it's just paying attention to food and what you put in your body. That is just a really simple first step. What drives you to the cupboard, to the snack cupboard? Invariably, it's not hunger, it's emotional. And also connecting to your body's cues for hunger and fullness. So that's can be a real process for some women who have overridden both of those for decades, not letting themselves eat when they're hungry, then not knowing they're full and keeping eating, probably because they've starved themselves all day. So there's sort of a crash of energy at the end of the day, and they are starving and their brain is screaming for food, which is usually when we make poorer choices with food, because our body is saying, I just need energy instantly. So it's just paying attention. It's just observing. And for a lot of women, they don't make those connections. They don't listen to their body's cues for hunger. That alone can be really powerful if you have spent a lifetime dieting. Am I hungry? that I'm going to eat, especially if you intermittent fast, which for a lot of women is just a diet. It's just another diet.
Yeah.
It's just a permission to skip meals. So if I have a client who say, well, I intermittent fast, but I was starving. And I said, so eat. Eat.
Yeah.
Maybe today you needed more calories. Maybe you did more yesterday. Maybe it depends on where you are in your cycle. If you're still cycling, eat if you're hungry. So that alone can be a big leap for some women. So that's where I recommend you start.
It's really powerful to think about that sense of permission and attunement and not overriding those powerful signals, because as women, we are often following rules rather than following our own intuition. But, you know, you've been taught to do this. This is the narrative. So do this or to be a good girl, right? So that rule is don't eat too much. Don't take up too much space. And the whole grapefruit thing, you know, the stuff we've grown up with and the workouts we were supposed to do in thongs, the madness that has surrounded us, then no wonder, again, that we have this emphasis on restriction and control rather than flourishing and actually nourishing yourself and enjoying the food that you take in.
Yeah.
I was wondering that as well. Like, I'm so glad you brought up the intermittent fasting, because I think there's a lot of things that are seen as like good, healthy tips that is actually just veiled disordered eating. What are some of those, I don't know when I say use the word trend, but what are some of the patterns you see in modern day that you actually think that's unhealthy and is veiled as less healthy?
The truth is that for most women, a balanced diet, which includes all the things they love, is absolutely fine. If it's balanced with stress management and activity and joy and happiness and time outside, that's usually the recipe for most people for vibrancy. So anything that is restrictive in whatever way it's called. So, you know, I'll have women who'll say, I've been doing keto for 3 years. I intermittent fast. I did the paleo diet. I'm on the autoimmune protocol. All of those have value, but almost always short term, or the FODMAPs is another one. They all have value. But when you are under the care of a specialist who is guiding you, because all of them are restrictive and shouldn't be used for long periods of time. Keto is a really good example. We've seen it can have amazing results for certain people. So we know with cancer, for example, we see amazing results, but it's under the care of someone who knows exactly what your body needs. So when someone says, oh, I've been on keto for 3-4 years, I mean, my heart sinks. You know, if I've been on FODMAP, my gut feels better, but it's only ever meant to be short term while we work out what's going on with your gut so we can do the healing work and you can put foods back in. So because FODMAP is really a low fiber diet, and we know fiber is super important for gut health. So it's any eating approach I'm a little wary of, because chances are it was designed to be used short term, not long term. Yes, they're the main ones that I see. And all the, oh, and the 5-2 and intermittent fasting and the time restricted eating and all of those that have been quite fashionable in the last few years. And they have benefits as well, but they usually have benefits for someone, for example, who is very overweight, who is type 2 diabetic, who has metabolic disease. And so it can be useful. But again, invariably useful when someone is saying, well, that's fine, but we need to make sure this is going into your diet. General overarching restriction for long periods of time isn't generally ideal, I would say.
So that's interesting of how people then might use very specialist niched intervention that should be controlled, guided by specialists as prevention when they don't need it and for far too long.
And in a way, invariably, all of those things are being used for weight loss. Always, they're always being used for weight loss.
Hello, busy working women. I've got news for you. There is a way where you can burn bright without burning out. There is a way where you can discover how to calm the overwhelm and create more ease and peace in your work and in your life. I want you to watch the replay of my free masterclass for ambitious female entrepreneurs, founders, CEOs, senior corporate women. And if you're wanting to create more impact in the world with less impact on yourself, this talk is for you. So let me see if this resonates with you. You're an ambitious female entrepreneur working hard to reach your goals, but it's taken a toll on your well-being. You can't remember the last time you properly switched off on a holiday without worrying about your business or the work to-do list. Your body is telling you to slow down, but you've got too much to do to listen, so you push through with more coffee or sugar. You worry about what other people think, or you second-guess your decisions, or procrastinate something until it's perfect. Well, then this talk is for you. Let's find you balance over burnout so you can reach your stretch your goals without becoming overstretched. Go to thethomasconnection.lpages.co/burnbright. That's thethomasconnection.lpages.co/burnbright to catch this free replay of my masterclass. I'll put the link in the show notes as well, so it's just easier for you to click it and watch it in your own time. And now back to the episode.
And that's the thing about weight loss as well. We're thinking about one of the phrases you've used before when I interviewed you on the podcast, the Pause Purpose Play podcast. You used the term crowding out the crap, which I found really helpful. It's an addition approach, not a subtraction approach, yeah. Because the subtraction means making things taboo, must not, should not. Yeah. No,
yeah,
and which psychologically the brain does not get on very well with, and then craves those things and wants to pursue those things. Whereas adding nutritional things in, what would be one of the things you think is helpful for people to know? You need to add more of this into your diet. What would that be?
I would say green leafy veg, dark green leafy veg, actually, especially for women. It's a great source of magnesium, iron, vitamin C. And you can always add a dark green salad that is bagged, you know, something watercress, spinach and rocket, for example, super easy to find in any supermarket. Add that in a bowl to anything you're eating. I had a client yesterday and she's doing so well and we've done so much good work. And she was saying, but everything kind of falls apart at the weekend because the kids are home. And so we end up eating tuna melts and we end up eating cheese on toast. And I said, that's fine. Just add, if you want to add in a dark green leafy veg on the side of either of those things, brilliant.
That's really helps guide me as well. Like they're adding in the more veg has been
just add in.
And you can do it if you were kind of busy and you're you know, thinking of family. Some of these things can be quite fun, gamified challenges for the family. Like how many vegetables can you add in? I like the sort of the whole plant points thing. Yeah. It works really well with my son who likes to gamify things. And adding things in means that you can also have choice on the table. Everyone can pick in the added things. We often have multiple different kinds of crudités because one child will eat carrots, the other one will eat only cucumber.
Yeah.
Having choice, it does mean it's more work. So then it's like, how do we make this happen without feeling overwhelmed because of all the extra things to add in? Any tips for batching or being smart about this?
Do you know, I don't batch cook. I loathe it. That's a confession from me. I just
glad to hear it because I can't deal with it.
So for me, it's just how I shop. So I don't even necessarily meal plan anymore. I will just make sure there is good quality protein, lots of veg, complex carb available, you know, in each weekly shop I do, and if I need to top up. And then I'll open the fridge and I will just pull out those three components and they go on a plate. And then I want to add in some healthy fats, and that might be an avocado, you know, sliced in a salad. It might be I just sprinkle on some seeds onto a salad. It might be that I pour some olive oil on. It might be we have oily fish, for example, and that's it. And then in terms of saving time, a really good approach is when you've done your shopping, and this takes probably 10-15 minutes more than when you're unpacking, I chop up veg and put them in the fridge. Carrots, red pepper, cucumber, so that my kids are a little bit older, so they can reach for them easily. I don't have to do that. And then again, for evenings, it just makes life a little bit easier. So it's about another 10-15 minutes when I unpack my shopping, when I wash everything, I just chop it roughly and it goes into, you know, a glass container into the fridge. And that can make the difference between, you know, when you're like a kid wants a snack and you just really can't be bothered to get up and chop a carrot. Carrots are done. Or I just give my kids a carrot and tell them to get on with it, but they are older. But yeah, that's for me has been a really good time saver. And you can, if you put some fruits in water, like berries do really well in water, that just preserves them for longer. I just keep a lot of colour in my fridge. I say, let's eat the rainbow. So whenever I do my shopping, whether it's in the supermarket or online, I'm always, and it's become second nature, what are the colours? What are the colours in there? If it's a lot of green, I will consciously go and look for orange and yellow and red. Is there any purple? Make sure there's some white. And then if that is what's in my fridge over a week, that's what we'll consume.
Yeah, it's a really interesting and liberating approach to it as well. And I often think of it that way when I cannot be bothered to bring out a recipe, or I'm just like, what are the components? I kind of call it my deconstructed meal. And it would be fine. Like not every single meal that you put on your plate has to be like a culinary masterpiece. Right?
Never a culinary masterpiece.
You kind of expect that.
Yeah, people think, oh, she's a nutritional therapist. They must eat really beautiful food. No, No, I want the food to be delicious and nourishing and colourful. Yes, but I don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen. I run a business. I have children. I look after the house. So for me, I don't have an hour and a half to cook in the evening. So I'm invariably looking for ways to cook a good meal easily. So for me, like one pan cooking is brilliant. I love one pan cooking. Less washing up, really easy to prep. What are my components? Throw in some chicken thighs and some chicken pieces. And then I love adding the colour. And I take a lot of joy from that. So there'll be some red pepper, some white onions, some red onions, some carrots, some courgette. And I'm just ticking my colours as I go. And I put that in the oven with some spices, some olive oil, and that's 45 minutes. And that is the meal. And then if anyone wants a green salad, we do that separately, but that's minimal time. So that is another really easy way to feed everyone easily.
Absolutely. So things where you can kind of do a little bit of prep, but not very much, and then you just mind itself in the oven. I have an oven you can have on timer. So I throw stuff in the oven, set it on a timer, and it turns off by itself and just keeps it on after heat. Go and get the nursery run or school run, etc. And when I come home, it's there.
Yeah.
Obviously, slow cookers are there.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a kitchen for 5 months now. So we have had an air fryer, a slow cooker, and a camping hob for the last four or five months. So that's really challenged my ability to cook. And so the slow cooker has really come into its own, I have to say. So I've literally been looking for recipes where you just chuck it in and leave it for 4 to 6 hours. And there is something really joyful about a slow cooker, because invariably your energy is better in the morning than the evening. So if you can find 10, 15 minutes to throw those things in the slow cooker and set it for 4 to 6 hours, the joy when at 6 o'clock you go, oh God, what's for dinner? Oh, it's done.
And it smells amazing.
Yeah, it's so good. And it's also really economical. It's, costs nothing to run a slow cooker. So there are ways, it's things like that. So I certainly don't batch cook. I can't.
So we kind of touching upon that, of all the things you get when you eat the rainbow, you're looking for the nutrients, adding things in, making it simple, making smaller tweaks to your behavior around food by being conscious when you shop, doing small amounts of prep, taking a lot of shortcuts and accepting imperfection. That does not have to be the prettiest meal on the plate for it to be nourishing. What are some of the mistakes you see people make when it comes to food and nutrition?
They will eat the same vegetables. So often in a house, it is, especially with a house with children, it will be frozen peas, broccoli, red pepper, cucumber, maybe some carrots, and those rotate. And that's brilliant. And there's lots of nutritional value in those five things, but we get the most benefit when we eat the rainbow. When we think about our gut health and how important it is for our mental health, for example, as well, we know that diversity is key. So that's why if you love your broccoli, maybe try some purple sprouting broccoli. If your kids love red pepper, buy some orange and yellow peppers as well. So what often happens is people know what they want, especially if they shop online, they tend to buy the same thing every week. So one really easy thing to do is just to each week buy one fruit or vegetable you don't usually eat. Just buy one different one and just add, remember, herbs and spices count as our plant diversity when it comes to feeding the gut. So, buy a herb you've never tried before, buy a spice you've never tried, some wonderful spices we can get in the UK now. So that's a really easy way to break out of the rut. So that's what I would say. A lot of people just get stuck in a rut, understandably, with their eating. So then they're shortchanging themselves slightly nutritionally.
So something there about just breaking the mold a bit. Yeah. That can be hard when you kind of, oh, we're going to cook, oh, well, let's just do spag bol, or whatever people have. And there's nothing wrong with having those staples, if anything, have them in the freezer so they're ready to take out for sort of any disaster modes. But having also the courage to maybe do that together. And as soon as the children are a little bit older, I mean, mine are nearly two and nearly seven. We could go on like a little detective hunt through the shops and like,
they love it.
Kids, what kind of vegetable is that? Yeah. Have you ever seen that vegetable before? Should we try it?
And I always said to my kids, I think they picked up I can't remember the name of it. It looks extraordinary. What is the name? It's gone. And I said, anything you choose, you can choose anything you want. We have a lovely green grocer near us. You have to try it. Is that okay that you'll try it? I'll cook it and you'll try. Oh yeah, absolutely. Because they had ownership over it. They got to choose. So they felt important. And they did. And sometimes they'd spit it out. And sometimes they would go, oh, this is good. Mm. You know, it feels like such a win when they try something new. So yeah, that works really well.
So having them be part of it rather than it's forced upon them is very important, because there's agency there that have
had some decision. It's very emotional feeding children. It's you know, a client said to me yesterday, her daughter's quite a fussy eater, and she said, I will make a meal for her. She will walk in, she's three, and she will go, no, and turn around and walk out. And it was a spaghetti bolognese. And then she started nursery the following day. And at the end of the day, the teaching assistant said, she had a beautiful lunch. We had bolognese today. She ate everything. So, you know, kids know the power of food. So when we attach a lot of emotion to food, we really model behavior for them as well. And I mean, that's just toddlers, I think. Toddlers are, you know, little dictators. For her, that little toddler was power. If they say no to something, take a deep breath. They may not say no tomorrow. They may not say no next week. Don't be disheartened.
Yeah, and keep going, because it's also saying, I value eating this. This is food that I value eating and is good for me. So I'm going to keep making it and keep putting it on the table. Yeah. We often think that we then have to neglect ourselves and our wishes and our palate because I need to make beige food, because that's what kids will eat, beige food. And I keep reminding myself of what people eat in other parts of the world. They don't serve just hot dogs. They eat flavorful food with lots of spices. So we cook things. The only thing we draw as a distinction in our house is we don't make it too spicy, because if they take a bite of something and they say, oh, it's too spicy, then we give them an alternative food, of course, because it's inedible to their palate.
Yeah.
But if it's to do with flavor, then they try it and they don't have to finish it.
Yeah.
Good job on trying it.
Yeah.
And it's the thing about repetition there, or trying things many, many times. I keep putting vegetables on my daughter's plate, and now she gets to choose which ones she eats. For the first year, most of them went on the floor. Now more of them go into her mouth than on the floor. So it's really hard to kind of tolerate that. And like you said, it's a very emotional thing. So what I would like to say of what both of our kind of client groups tend to do is then they put themselves last. So kids won't eat this, so I won't cook this. And I find that very sad, because it's sort of like we're robbing ourselves of some of the joy we have in our food.
Yeah, or I will see women who feed their children really beautifully and create great meals for their kids. And I said, will you, do you eat with your children? No, I tend to wait for my husband. And then 8:30, 9 o'clock, they're both too tired to eat. So they might have, you know, a glass of wine and some crisps, maybe a bowl of cereal. They might have some bread and cheese, or throw a ready meal into the microwave. And that's enough for them. But they have created something really nourishing and wonderful for their kids. And that is a real sign for me of not connecting to your body, of not being compassionate to your body. And then women will wonder why they feel bloated, or they're constipated, or their skin isn't great, or they're not sleeping very well. And it's just because there's been no nutrition guidance in their life. They don't understand. And it can be really powerful, just understanding that if you eat a load of sugar or drink a load of wine, you get to do that. No one gets to tell you you can't, but it might affect your sleep. And it might mean that that's why you feel less alert in the morning. And so if you had that red wine and pudding after a nourishing meal, the spike on your blood sugar would be less and you'd probably feel better. So no one gets to tell you anything is bad or you can't have anything, but it's about balance. It's about, and often I'll say to them, you can eat whatever you want, and they'll go, no, I can't. Yes, you can. And that is a real for them. And then they'll go away and they might eat everything and, you know, all of the, you know, the junky food they've always tried to resist. And after a week or two, they kind of go, I don't want to just eat that anymore. No, but you can. But someone said, once that power is taken away, it loses its pull.
Yeah, and then, choice.
And you see it all the time. I see it all the time. And then women are eating, you know, a balanced, healthy meal, and they still eat chocolate and they still have cake and they still have their wine, but it doesn't feel forbidden. The power is gone. So it's just food.
And I agree with that, because again, the taboo is removed. And it's also coming back to full circle, we said in the beginning, of tuning into how your body feels. And the older we get, my clients certainly say that they feel more sensitive to caffeine, sugar, alcohol, fatty foods. And I don't mean that in healthy fats, fatty foods, I mean like trans fats. And it starts to become a self-selecting process almost. And that doesn't mean we don't have that birthday cake. We don't enjoy ourselves. Just sometimes we think about how much do I eat of it? And do I stop when I feel full? Do I stop when I feel like I've kind of had enough now or enjoyed the flavor?
Yeah.
So I love the thing of like smaller, like sampling things, like some places you can get like mini puddings. I love that, because I get to have a little treat. Yeah. I love a little pudding.
Yeah.
I don't need to eat like the slab that is like bigger than my head.
Yeah.
Because if it's on my plate, I feel an urge to finish it. So ordering smaller portions is a really nice way of doing it as well. Sometimes like eating kids' desserts. You get, my son had a beautiful little sundae the other day, and it was just a smaller version of what the adult would have. And I'm like, that would have been perfect. Just enough.
Yeah.
I would have loved the flavors of that. It had fresh berries on top and like So there's something there as well of actually we don't need as much as we think we need. The portions are supersized these days. So it's been really helpful to think about this together with you and just coming up with some quick things people can do. It's not about getting it perfect, because nobody eats perfect food, not even people who have like chefs cooking for them, because then that choice is also taken away, the ownership is taken away. So doing it in a way that fits with your busy life, making some small changes. We haven't touched upon water, but make sure we drink enough water. And if anyone wants to reach out to you because they do need a little bit more tailored approach, where can they find you?
Well, I run my Energized Mum Method, which is my 6-month group program for women in perimenopause. So I have women in there who are in their late 30s all the way up to sort of their early 50s. And then I run free events through the year. I probably run 3 or 4 at least through the year. So it's always worth signing up to my newsletter so you can get told about those. And then I have my one-to-one packages, which vary between sort of 3-6 sessions and 12 sessions. So it's really dependent on what you need and how much support you need and what you're looking for. But I always offer free calls. So if anyone is curious about nutritional therapy and would like to find out more, that's the best thing, is to book a call with me and take it from there.
Fantastic. And are you on social media as well?
I am. I'm on Instagram and I have a private Facebook group, which everyone is welcome to join, called the Nourished Mum Meetup. Yes, I think that's everything. I am on LinkedIn, but as we talked about before we started recording, I don't seem to have the time to do LinkedIn as well. No. Excuse me. So it's mainly Instagram, ThaliaPellegrini_nutrition.
Fantastic. We'll make sure to put all the links in as well so people can find you and connect with you and learn more about these amazing things we can do to nourish our bodies, not just feed them, but actually nourish them. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
I hope you found this really helpful to think about how nutrition isn't just about the food you put on your plate, but also the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions, and all the behaviors you have around it. It is not your fault if you struggle with how you feed yourself, how you nourish your body. It is not your fault if you have lots of difficult thoughts and feelings around this. Now, there is a reason why I invited Thalia to be the resident expert in Burnbright, and why I have been her resident expert in her group coaching program, because there is so much overlap between nutrition and psychology. And this is why we have all these helpful videos and helpful tools within Burnbright. And this is why I released a snippet of that conversation today. You can come into the Burnbright coaching program to see the whole video of us having this conversation. And just keep in mind that you don't have to change everything all at once. Pick one thing. Pick one thing and really focus on getting that to be a new habit, and then stack other things on top of it. If you want to join Burnbright, the doors are open now until the 27th of September, and then we close the doors until January 2024. To have a conversation with me about Burnbright, reach out to me on info@thethomasconnection.co.uk. You can read more about the program on thethomasconnection.co.uk/burn-bright. Hyphen is that tiny little mini dash you got in between words. So that's thethomasconnection.co.uk/burn-bright. Can't wait to see you. And until I speak to you next time, do take care of yourself. Thank you so much for listening to the end of this episode of the Pause, Purpose, Play podcast with me, Michaela Thomas. If you found this episode helpful, make sure that you hit that follow or subscribe button to not miss the next episode. Tell other people about this podcast, because together we can change the world and be more kind, caring, and compassionate to ourselves as well as other people. And as always, do take care of yourself. Until I see you next week.